Let's be honest, man. Kim Kardashian is, I don't know her personally in terms of like her character and stuff like that, but on the outside, she's just a very just fine ass woman, right?
No,
I love that you said that to then say like,
tell me more.
I felt like she was here, and you were like going like, "Hey, Kim, man, I just want to say you're a great person, but." By the way, you're a fine ass woman. All right. And welcome to Standby Podcast with JJ and Francisco. JJ talking about he has a personal iPad for porn. And
what's wrong with that? I think
Before we discuss that, let's introduce our guests that we have here, because it's weird to be talking about this, and he's like, hello, Dave Helm, everybody. First of all, a great stand-up TV writer, originally from Chicago. You opened for Tony Rock and Hannibal Buress as well, and Doug Stanhope, and now you're the newest paid regular at the Comedy Store where we are right now, which is pretty awesome. Cool, man. How do you feel about that?
It's dope, man. The last show that me and you did was my first main room ever.
Oh, that's
and,
right.
And you brought me up.
That's
and
right.
And I was like, where's the light, you know? And I didn't know.
Oh, man.
That shit.
Did you run that light or not?
No,
like,
I don't.
You, like, stuck to your time, yeah.
No, I saw it when it came on, man. But that shit was magic. And, it's funny that people who perform here for years, I was talking to Laura Bites about it. She was like, I still get like goosebumps every time I go up in that main room, because it's just like a fucking drug, man.
Yeah,
that shit felt like I was a rock star, man.
Mm-hmm.
It was great.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That is true. I mean, I got past here a while back, and I still feel, you know, those jitters or those things when you're about to go up. I mean, especially that main room, I think, is kind of like a dress rehearsal for any theater gig that you ever have to do in your life as a comic. You know, it's like a very microscopic way to shoot, right?
It's sexier, man. Like, yeah. Like, you know when you do like an improv and it's like in a fucking mall parking lot somewhere, and it's like a nice ass comedy club, but it's next to like a PF Chang's.
To the pretzel place, yeah.
Like, this shit is like, you're on the Sunset Strip.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, I mean, this is where Frank Sinatra and play and all that Sammy Davis.
All the cocaine.
You know?
These people tables, got killed, man, here. We always talk about these tables.
People got killed here, apparently, too.
Yeah.
Like, in where we are right here. Apparently, right. There's like a story. Yeah, because this was Ciro's was the name of this place before the Comedy Store. It was like a Italian,
gangsters?
Like a club thing, you know, and gangsters were kind of like.
People definitely got killed then.
Yeah, so like they would come here, and like that's why they say there's ghosts of people here that got killed.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Is there a person that when you're on the main stage that you think of, like a legendary comic, where you're like, man, this person was here? This person stood here on stage
all
as
of
well.
Them.
I mean, yeah. Is there a specific one?
Yeah. I mean, not while I'm performing. I mean, that would be...
But like after, when you get off, you're like...
wow, Jim Carrey.
Robin Williams did this before.
I would say Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
You know? But I don't even know if he performed in the main room like that, but it just seemed like he would.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think they both did the OR in the main room, but yeah, but that's amazing. Congrats on that, man.
Thank you, man.
It's very,
And thank you for coming in and taking the time to do this, you know. First the main room at the Comedy Store, then
it's a very communal spot in terms of people, like, showing love and stuff like that. Because I remember, like, it's weird because, like, you'd be in the back and they'd be like, hey, get the fuck out of here if you don't belong back here. But then once you kind of get embraced by the family, it's like, you can do whatever the fuck you want now.
Yeah. Once you're in kind of thing. I mean,
as long as you're not doing no dumb shit, you know what I'm saying?
Of course, yeah. It's kind of like, what's it called? The Olive Garden. Once you're here, you're family. You know, except for the breadsticks.
That's a
great
motto.
You just get lines of coke. No, I'm kidding.
I dig that.
but thanks for coming, man. And like, by the way, is there, before, because I want to put this out first, before, is there anything, you know, people want to, you know, we'll call it back later, but if there's any, you know, social media that people want to follow you or look at you, you know, if you want to say it right now, that'd be great. I think so, right?
Sure, that sounds, no time like the present.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right, I got a really fucking cool special on Amazon Prime that I filmed last year during the pandemic at the Rose Bowl.
Nice.
Right on.
So if you know any Dave Hallam trivia, I am the first comedian to perform for the Tribeca Film Festival.
Awesome, man.
They started comedy in 2020. And then the pandemic hit. I couldn't go to New York because of COVID. So they were like, all right, we're going to do it at the outside the Rose Bowl.
Oh, you were due to film in New York at the time.
But they made it a drive-through show instead. And that shit was fucking dope.
It was weird.
Dope,
nicely done, man.
But cool.
Did it have all the same rules that they had at some of the outdoor gigs, like here in LA, where like no honking, but everybody had clackers?
Encouraged honking. Like that was cool. That was cool to get an applause break from people just honking their horns at you, man. You know what I'm saying? Like that shit was dope, and that was a cool thing to just do an hour and like. I didn't have to retape anything. Like everything was smooth, and that shit was just fucking great. So if you got Amazon Prime, check out DJ the Chicago Kid on Amazon Prime.
Nice.
Awesome.
We'll check that out. And and that's a great segue to you're originally from Chicago, right?
I am.
Born and raised there? Or?
Yep. I'm from the suburbs, which is a big thing. Like LA is weird because LA is like just a big piece of land.
Yeah.
And like if you're from Culver City, like I'm from LA because LA County is LA, but in Chicago, if you say you're from Chicago and you're from the suburbs, people will beat your ass.
Oh, right? Really?
Right? Like, bitch, you from South Holland? You're not from Chicago, right? But out here, it's just all inclusive.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So what suburbs are you from?
South Holland.
Okay. You know?
but I moved. Like my parents wouldn't let us hang out in the city in Chicago because they were from the South Side, and it was fucked up. So they moved to the suburbs to raise us. But then when I moved back to Chicago as an adult, I wasn't going to stay in the suburbs. The suburbs suck, right? So I moved back into the city, and I lived in the city for, like, 8 years before I moved out here?
Okay.
And it wasn't like I was far from Chicago, but it's definitely like a 30-minute drive into the city.
Got it.
So it's safe to assume your first steps in stand-up happened in the city of Chicago. Was that part of your motivation as well, to move into the city? So you can
like driving drunk. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Like, you can't make that long drive every day to the suburbs like that, man.
Makes sense. I've checked out some of your stand-up. Of course, you were a teacher.
Yeah.
So there's elements of that in your stand-up. Was that something that you avoided at first, does Davey Boy talk about having been a teacher? But Dave Hallam,
I found that the urban rooms love that teacher shit because they can relate. But when I would do like the gluten joke, black folks would be like, "Man, what the fuck you talking about?" Right? So, it would influence like my set at times, but I stopped doing that shit because I just realized that that's kind of fucked up to pander to your audience based upon like what they look like. So I was just like, I'm going to just tell these jokes, and if you like them, you don't. And I find that they respect that more than me trying to cater to what the crowd is.
Exactly. A very similar thing happened to me when I moved to LA to pursue comedy, because you know, I came from DC, but I never did comedy over there. But like when I came here, they were like, "Oh, you got to do the Latino rooms and stuff like that." But I was like, but when I would do them, I was like, it was complete. I felt very like, you know, like I don't belong here kind of thing, because I was like, you know, it was like the Latinos in LA were like, you know, like Mexican descent and kind of like some of like, you know, you got like a little bit of cholo
you're
stuff.
You're an outsider.
Yeah, and I'm going
Latino,
like, hey, what's up, guys? I'm from Venezuela. They're like, whoa. So I would always feel that too. And like, but also the same
you're like
thing.
Like those animals that they re-release into the wild after giving them some rehab, you know? That dolphin, they're like, we've healed him. He got caught in a trap and we've helped. He knows humans now. And then you release him out and the other dolphins are like, who the fuck are you? What's this dude?
Yeah, you've been in a zoo for a while, man.
But that's a good point, though. It's like you were made to feel like you were not brown enough.
Yes.
Right?
For real, yeah. And that's one of the reasons that led me to come to places like the Comedy Store, because at least it's funny because I felt a little more connected here, because I was like, I just had to be funny. I didn't have to, you know, like you said, pander to a type of crowd or do stuff. And also it was stuff that I couldn't even if I wanted to, because it was a lot of the comics would do jokes about LA stuff, and I'm like, I'm not from LA, so how am I even gonna talk about that? You know. But it's kind of the same thing. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to just be me. You know what I mean? Just be me and just perform and, you know, do the jokes for, doesn't matter what type of comedy, you know, what crowd it is.
That's it. And that's what you want. That's what you want to be.
Yeah. So, yeah, so I definitely relate to that. And then, So you how long did you were a teacher for?
12 years, man.
12 years. And what grade did you teach?
So I started in Atlanta, Georgia, teaching middle school as a teacher's like assistant. It's weird how I got into teaching, too, because I didn't plan on being a teacher. I was an engineering major in college. Mm-hmm. Oh. But that shit was, like, way too hard. And then I got a math degree. And then nobody tells you that you can't do shit with a math degree besides, like, teach math. So I ended up teaching math. But my first class that I taught was, like, Georgia history. And like, oh, wow. Like, I just had to get a job. And then I was, like, middle school. I'm like, oh, these kids are sweet. You know, they're starting to go into puberty, so they're starting to get a little crazy.
Yeah.
But then I went to this high school in like Decatur, and these motherfuckers, I saw a dude kick his pregnant girlfriend in the stomach, and I was like, help!
Oh,
help!
Man.
Jesus!
Wow.
I'm not doing shit, help! In high school.
Oh, man.
I had a student who shot at another student the previous day, so, and they were both in my first period.
Wow.
So they came in, and it was just on and popping, and I'm like, help!
Oh.
Damn! Help!
Damn.
So I would just step into the hallway and scream. Like, I would
you want to get in there. Wow. Yeah.
I would become a full bitch. Yeah.
Jeez, so when you evolve into a stand-up comedian, is it escapism from this insanity, or was it because you had to entertain them, as you know, you had to keep them focused and stuff, so you develop some
it's
of
a little
skills,
bit of both, man.
Yeah,
like,
right, yeah.
It's you have to, the same way that you have like a minute, half a minute to a minute to grab an audience, and they can mm-hmm. determine whether they like you or not.
Yes.
The kids are the same fucking way, right? Mm-hmm. Like after that right. first few minutes, they know if they can beat your ass.
Yeah.
Right? Or they,
right.
know, they know if they're going to respect you.
Yes.
Right? So it's kind of like that hook of, and it's called literally a hook in the classroom. Like, what is the hook to get them to engage in my lesson? It's also the same way on stage. Like, what is the hook that's going to have them?
Like look at, yeah, like listen to you. Yeah.
To pay attention. So I think that I'm a stand up because I'm a teacher in terms of helping me like get pretty like decent at this shit, you know?
That's awesome. Yeah, that's actually the same thing too. I mean, I taught tennis, which is I think have the same problems as you.
I'm sure they loved you in East LA.
Dude, were any of the tennis kids
none of them shut
their,
each other?
Anybody kicking their pregnant girlfriends on the tennis?
Also,
court.
They were like 5 and 7 years old.
Okay. And kids, I bet the Mexican comics loved me. Like you were from Venezuela, you taught tennis. They hated you.
Yeah. Went to private school, so yeah, I was like. This kid, yeah, but it's the same thing. I mean, like, it is like I would see like either the kids like you right away and they or they don't, and also they're not dumb. I mean, like they're no. That's the thing that you also I helped me even do even later on doing colleges too. Like when I would do colleges, I'd be like, yeah, you can't pander to kids and be like, hey, I'm gonna be cool as you. They're like, nah, just be you, man. Like just be a cool old dude.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And that's what they respect. You're as soon as you start going like, hey. Was I'm gonna get woke? Like, get the fuck out! You know, like don't mention that. You don't even know what that means. Just like, just do your shit and that thing. So it's like, it is the same thing. I think for every and it relates to stand up too. Like, and that's the thing when you do different crowds or different rooms, same thing. If you do pander to them, people be like, fuck you. You're not being yourself. When you're by yourself, then boom.
My favorite thing to watch is when I see white comics do black rooms. they come up dancing and shit. I'm like, you didn't do that shit in the OR.
Yeah.
But now you on Crack 'Em Up Thursday.
Yeah. Or when they start talking. Yeah. When they start talking like, "What's up?" I'm like, "Well, you don't talk like that. No. Why are you talking now? Why do you have a different voice now? Like that doesn't make sense." Yeah. Like, I mean, the few rooms that I did when I, you know, like here, like I did remember Tripping on Tuesday, and I did the one in I remember doing the one in Inglewood. I forget what's it called?
The J Spot.
Mm. And yeah, I mean. Not saying I didn't do, like, I didn't kill, but I didn't do bad because I was like, yeah, I'm not going to do, I'm just going to be me. And they, you know, you just got to be you. You know, you can't just be like, hey, you know.
I did do the opposite, though, where I went to, it was the spot in Chicago called the Comedy Bar, and I had been doing, like, Southside rooms, and I was Little Rail's driver for like 3 years in Chicago.
Oh,
so
okay.
Wherever Little Rail went, Dave Hellum took him there. And that would come with stage time sometimes, right? So my first show doing like this club, this white club in like downtown Chicago, and I guess I was like, hey guys, how you doing? And Rail was like, what the fuck was that? That's not you, right? So
use your white voice.
I use my white voice. Rail did not like that shit.
I'm driving by myself tonight. You stay here. That's great. And then, so you did. So you said you. How long did you taught for? Or
12 years.
12 years.
Wow. Hey, I'm just curious. Did you ever do that thing? So, because I have this memory when it was still high school though. But I had a high school teacher who was new to the school, and on his first day in school, he picked. I think it was his strategy. Pick what he thinks is like the toughest kid in the class and like come at him in order to take over the class, and it just backfired on him miserably.
That
like
sounds terrible.
Tried to, yeah, that's he just tried to control idea. The classroom.
You got to be that person's like friend.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
For real.
Exactly. So.
It's like in jail. I never been to jail, but I assume like you wanna be the friend of like the main guy or the whoever leading the you know the boss.
Yeah. Make his friend.
be the friend
of
his bitch.
That's very Deadpool of you. Very Deadpool of you. Because they say the opposite too. They say you go in, you pick a fight with the biggest fucker.
Yeah, that could really backfire.
So, it never works. You know, it can all backfire. I mean, you're in prison. Something's backfired in a big way for a start.
It's sad that the same rules to a classroom apply to prison. It's pretty much the same shit, though.
Well, yeah. But I was going to say, so you did 13 years or 12.
12.
12, sorry. And then were you doing... So while your transgression to do stand-up, were you, like, doing it while teaching? Or because right. I did that. I mean, I did all the teaching and even working in an office while trying to do stand-up.
So 04 to 09, I was just teaching. 09 to 15, I was doing both. And I was on the road with Tony Rock. And we were in Ohio. And they don't have improvs out there. They have the Funny Bone.
Funny Bones, yeah.
The Funny Bone. What city was that? Columbus.
Columbus, right? Funny Bone, yeah.
Uh-huh. And we were just having a beer after a set one night. And he was like, when are you going to do this shit for real? And I was like, what you mean? He's like, yeah. He said, you're funny. He said, but you don't believe in yourself in terms of like what you can be. Mm. He said Superman didn't know he could fly until he had to. And I was like, I don't read comics. But I don't know what that means.
Superman?
He was just like, yo, jump. Like, and then my principal, I found out they were having layoffs at my school. So I hit my principal, I said, man, if you got to fire somebody, you know, like, I'll take the bullet.
Also,
you'll get
unemployment. Yeah. Definitely got unemployment for 6 months after that. And nice. I started like featuring for him and, you know, getting on the road. And he would pay for my hotel. And I would just have to get there. And I would sell my, and he would let me sell merch
nice.
As a feature, which most people won't let you do. So I was able to clear like, you know, like $1,000 like a weekend, which to me at that time, because teaching money ain't shit, right? So I was probably doing equally.
The same amount. That's crazy. You know.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. And then, were you still living? I mean, you said you were teaching in Atlanta.
I moved back to Chicago.
Okay.
So I was married before. So I'm married now, but this is my second marriage. My first marriage ended in 2009, and I just wanted a clean slate. Then I got out of Atlanta. And came back home. That's what made me actually start doing comedy because I was like, yo, once your marriage fails, I was in a low place. I was like, let me just get on stage and just...
And talk about this.
Do this 5 minutes at this open mic. And I sat down because I was very comfortable sitting down. And the other comics were pissed off. They were like, who the fuck are you? I was like, I feel comfortable. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you know?
Yeah.
But I did my set. It felt great. And it made me happy, you know, in terms of... So it was like, it was on and popping after that in terms of like wanting to do that more and more. And more and more and more. Mm-hmm. And then, but that was in Chicago at that point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. So you moved back to Chicago and then you were there. And then when did you move? Did you move somewhere else to, or did you, or?
Nope.
Did you stay there in Chicago until you moved here to LA?
Yeah. I was a part of a Second City touring group, and we had a sketch show called Black Side of the Moon. Mm. That was at the William Mammoth Theater in D.C. for 2 months.
Nice.
That was cool. We got to do like it was like a hybrid show of stand up and sketch stuff.
Oh, okay. All right.
That was pretty fucking great.
So you performed on both sides of that?
Yeah, like I did a set, and then I would be an actor on the shit. So
oh, that's sweet.
That was a dope show. But then that show ended after 2 months, and I came back to Chicago, and I was like, man. I don't want to be here. Cause I feel like I kind of did everything
like you're rich,
I
you're,
can do, right?
Yeah.
And then I was on stage at this show called Parlor Car on a Thursday night. And I got off and I got an email from my manager. And he was like, yo, you start work on Monday.
on this writing job that I was previously told no to a few months before. And that, like, I came to L.A. interview. I thought I got the job, didn't get it. So we fast forward 4 months later, I'm on stage. I get off. I got an email from my manager saying, you start Monday on the James Davis show. It's called Hooded Jason.
Wow. Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember. Yeah, right? Yeah.
So
that's awesome.
I didn't have a whole lot of money, maybe like $1,000 in my name, and I was like, I'm gonna figure it out. You know? So I just moved out here and lived on couches in Koreatown. Well, there were no Koreans, honestly, around me.
Yeah.
And you just figured that shit out, man. And then, but I was just happy to be here.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that contract was for 8 weeks. I didn't read the fine print.
You so, thought it was like...
I was like, I'm going to be rich forever, baby!
It's like at least a year of work.
That's a dirty move they have here in Hollywood, too, is these 8-week contracts, because they'll never say that they fired you. They never say they let you go. Yeah. They just don't renew you. So that's why there's a lot of writers in this town who are like, fucking, they fired me, but that's never the truth. The truth is
that's
they
so
didn't,
fucking
they
true.
Didn't renew you. They, they keep you on these 8-week, 10-week...
So they just keep renewing and renewing until,
The idea is that they'll keep renewing, but if they just choose not to.
They just don't renew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just didn't think that it, I was spending all that money. Like just buying TV. I went to like Target for fruit and came back with a flat screen. Like, literally, I'm not lying. Like,
wait, how does that, how does that work? You're like shopping? Because like, there's like. I mean, from I remember from Target.
Been to Target, you can get.
No, I've been to Target. No, I know, but they're not together. It's not like you're like getting a banana in the TV's right here.
Hey man, like you're only a few aisles away. Yeah.
That's true.
Only
I know.
A few aisles away.
You stumble into the TV aisle. Like,
I got underwear and bananas the other day. Like,
I wanted to be
combos
a good roommate, and the guy who I was living with, he needed a TV, so I was like, "Yo, let me get the TV for the crib," you know. So
that's a good roommate. That is a good roommate.
But I took the TV when I left, though.
Oh.
But I didn't plan. But I just had money for the first time, like in my life, like that. So I was just like, "Fuck it, let's do it," you know. Yeah. But that money came and went, and I remember going to. I had a homegirl who like saved my life, and she worked in accounting. And she, I was like, "I'm broke. I don't have any money left." She let me switch my taxes in terms of like what I claimed, mm-hmm. so I could just get some of that money back immediately,
mm-hmm.
and that gave me like $4,000 back in my pocket just so I could like survive.
Just
out
have
here.
Something, yeah, yeah.
Because I was down bad.
That was after you were done with the writing job.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You just had your TV.
Yeah, I just had my TV, man, and my fruit. That was it.
Just a couple possessions, man.
Yeah.
I called myself a minimalist for the start of my career, but it was probably because I couldn't afford lot.
Yeah.
And then eventually all this clutter builds up. I used to be a minimalist. No, you used to be fucking poor.
Yeah.
That's what you are.
Man, it was the apartment that we were in was just so, like, I didn't know what MS-13 was. Like, I thought it was like Microsoft. I was like, oh shit! Like, they need to update the.
You don't want to update that. That's
like, it's 2017. This shit is outdated.
So you had neighbors that were MS-13, or like they lived, or I mean. I don't know.
I'm on Olympic and Hoover, okay? Like, I got
MS-13 adjacent.
I got every race of neighbor who look like they want to do all the crack cocaine, right?
Yeah.
So my mom visited me, and she was like, are you okay? She's like, because I moved from a nice area.
Yeah, from living. Yeah, that happened exactly to me, too. I mean, like, I think, well, it was funny because it is that funny. Like, my dad, with the first... studio that I had was in Westwood, you know, like UCLA,
that's a good area.
That's a good area, yeah. Like, but my dad, like, but it was like, you know, it was an old like apartment and stuff like that. My dad came to visit me. I remember he's like he treated like he looked at it like he was like I was living in a dumpster.
Oh no!
And I was like, but now I go back. I'm like, it wasn't that bad. I'm like, but I remember he's like, he made me feel like he's like. It's like, are you okay? I'm like, I'm in Westwood. It's like, it's not like,
oh man,
I'm like, I'm not that.
Dudes, I associate with it because I'm still in my first apartment when I got like, Orlando Labor, you know,
that's my guy.
He's been a guest on our podcast, so I inherited his apartment. All right, when I met him, he was nice enough. He was moving to Florida at the time, so he sorted me out. It's a studio just off of Hollywood Boulevard, and I gotta say, the romantic. Comedian in me, the guy who was like, someday maybe I'll move to LA and do comedy. that taking that apartment on. And plus, Orlando's a charming guy, so he's got great rent control. Mm-hmm. And I managed to come in on the back of that. So, you know, shout out to Orlando for hooking me up. But I've been there for 5 years now, and the romance is wearing off of it. I am looking around at the studio apartment going, all right, what am I? I always say I'm on year five of the one-year plan. And so it might be time to make a change.
That's not bad, though. Having you have your own space, though.
Yes.
Like, most
own
people
space,
that's
come out here, they are sleeping on somebody's couch, a closet. It's just you, man.
Yeah.
You know? And it's rent control, too. So, like, rent control, I see it as a thing. I'm like, well, I mean, yeah, it's a studio apartment, but if it's still rent control, you know, it's, you're saving some money.
Yeah,
you know
I'd take
I mean?
A shittier apartment if it was rent control. For sure.
I know. I keep trying to tell myself that there's a lot of silver lining to this place.
What else did your mom say about your place?
Well, there was a woman living in a box on the sidewalk when she pulled up. I think she was using the bathroom outside, and so it's she didn't like shit on me, but she was just like, "Are you?" Sure, like, this is what you want,
money you
want
to do, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, like, just trust that
I'm on the right path.
Yeah.
I remember when my dad passed, this is 2014, my mom came to New Orleans, and this is a terrible idea, but we had Thanksgiving in New Orleans, and everybody's drunk out their mind, and she was like, when are you going to do shit with this comedy? She was like, I don't see it. You say you're a comedian. Like, that shit hurt my soul.
Yeah, right? That's
when your mom's saying it.
But then in Chicago, I did a show on a fucking boat, and she got a free wristband for liquor, and she was like, oh, I knew you was gonna make it. I was like,
it's important to achieve things that your parents respect.
Hey, remember I said that? I forget about that.
My dad was that. My dad's a military man.
You're a true success.
My dad's a military man, and I remember when I was younger, I did a gig on a base, and as long as the word got back to him, and he's like, he gets it extra proud, you know. But other than that, I don't know what my son's up to. I think he's doing stand-up somewhere.
Yeah.
But I do one gig on a base for a bunch of officers, and the word gets back to me. He goes, well done, son. I'm glad to hear things are working out for you. And I'm like, Dad, that was the worst gig I've had in, like, months. You don't even know.
When you can take your parents to dinner, and you always pick up the check, that's when they start being like, okay. But that wasn't the case for a long time.
Yeah. No, that is true. I mean, that's that happened. Same thing with my, my dad also passed away. He never had a chance to see any of the success that I had, or but he did tell me the same thing. He's like, are you sure you wanna? Literally the same thing. Are you sure you're doing the right thing? And I remember in the phone, I'm like, this is what I'm doing, man. Like, what the fuck? I'm not moving back. This is it. I'm doing this thing, man. And it's at least my mom has finally seen it, least, and like, now she's like, and still she's like always like, my mom is like, and my family, like my mom's side, is very like, they always look at the negative first and then the positive. So it's like, even when they're trying to be supportive, it's like,
right,
like the first time I did like this, like, acting thing, I said it to my mom, and my mom's like, how come you only have one line? I was like, well, it's like, it's a small part. I mean, I still got in. It's like,
give me the director's number. I gotta have a word with him.
I was like, okay. I was like, you know what? All right, well, that's fine. But I learned to realize that's how they were growing up, and they're always gonna look at it.
It doesn't go away. I'm sure both you guys, like, I'm sure all three of us can associate with the fact that even my uncle is Calgary, but he dropped me a line on Facebook the other day going, kind of like a when are you gonna make it kind of thing. All right,
that is so annoying.
I made it about 20 years ago. You just have a different idea
of what
making it is.
I think that making it thing is very an annoying thing. Because
to them, making it is probably only the top half a percentile of stand-up comedians, and that's not who makes it. You know, a good 60% of us are going to make it.
If you're making money doing this, and that's making it. You know what I mean? That's making it.
Yeah,
you know,
it's like, not just Kevin Hart.
They're from a different generation where if you were making it, you got a TV deal, you got a book, a movie. You know what I'm saying? That's just what comics got back then. Tonight Show. You know, like that whole package.
Yeah.
And now making it is just like, I am living. Like, I can just sustain my life. And because so many comics out here, and I say sustain it without having a day job.
We haven't to work.
Do you put a price on your free time? Because I do that sometimes. I'm like, I just pay myself $100 today to just do nothing.
I'm not that rich.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
Still gotta grind it out.
I mean, it's a value to your free time, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. And that, so I want to go back to the thing when you were on the road being with Tony and all this, because like we always talk about like, first of all, what's your, when you go on the road, and I mean you will get the your own hotel and right, you will get, or you have to share hotels?
No, I will get my own room.
Yeah, that's good. Like, because what would you, first of all, what would you do like if you had free time, you know, during the like, obviously you're, would you hang out with Tony or would you have free time to do other stuff? And what would you like to do when you're on the road? Or especially now, too, when you're by yourself headlining. You know?
Well, Tony's a, he has a son now, so he's probably chilled out a whole lot. But back, every night we have to go out. Okay. Every night. And I'm like, yeah. I'm tired.
And you're hot. Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah,
you
yeah.
got to hang.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So most of the time during the day, I would just sleep, you know? And I've started running and stuff now, trying to get more like just active in terms of my health. But back then, I would just go to the bar during the day and just cure my hangover. And eat bar food and just it was just like a cycle of depression where I'm just I'm getting drunk the previous night out, getting bottle service, and I'm feel like shit. Then I go get more bar food to cure my hangover.
Just to even do the show at night, the next, you know.
By the time Sunday hit, that last show, it would be so, my set would be so bad. Like, it was just, I just want to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, because for you, they're kind of like the same thing, right?
Or, yeah, well, you give me flashbacks because when I first moved here, I was touring with Jim Jefferies, and we actually, he because of depression and stuff, we used to stay in the same room. Like, we stayed in the same room. Because
of depression?
Before. Well, Jim, Jim.
I think that's called a different thing.
Because of romance, because of.
You got played.
No, we used to stay. We used to stay in the same bed. And no, we used to stay in the same room. We'd stay in separate rooms now. The tour's built up some momentum over the years.
He feels better now.
Yeah, he feels better now, and he's raising children and shit. So,
but you were at the party all the time too, right?
Or like, but it was out. Yes, it was going out every night, and there's a certain amount of Well, I mean, it's really. I think they really enjoy the fame side of things at first when you're busting. You'd be the only ability to walk into that bar and go, that's that guy from.
Yeah. That's the thing, because also, like, I'll go, like, I never had the experience of going on a, you know, on the road.
Yeah. Wait! The party's on!
I've been on the road. No, not with like a big, like a, you know, a big celebrity or somebody that has, like, so I never. So all my time, I just always been like by myself in a way, and like, right. And I go like, yeah, I never gonna go party, you know. It's like, and now I go like, yeah, cause I don't have the money or the celebrity status to fucking, to go out. So it's like, yeah, I have to pay. It's like, I don't have money to afford. Yeah, if I have free stuff,
you do a college in the boonies, and then you hit the local bar, you just walk in, I'm here, everybody, and then nothing.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going back to the room.
Yeah. You know what's interesting about that? Like, you make so much more money doing colleges. You know what I'm saying? And no one necessarily knows your name. Mm-hmm. Like, they may or they may not. The kids don't give a fuck. Yeah. But unless you're headlining on the road, the feature money is shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
For the most part. But it's so much fun. Like, hanging out with your heroes. And you probably shouldn't be around your heroes too much. But I remember I was got to go, like I said, on the road with Hannibal one time.
Yeah.
And I just had a grin on my face the entire weekend because, like, this is just like my Chicago, like, legend, you know what I'm saying, in terms of stuff. But you grow, and then these people who were your heroes just become your peers. Right?
Yeah.
And so, like, that allure wears off. And sometimes, and I'm not saying Hannibal did this because Hannibal's, like, still one of my homies. People can kind of, like, because you're not the same person that needed them the same way that you were like when you first started, and you were not, and you're better, a lot better than what you were. When it's like your powers kept growing, they can have resentment towards you. You know what I'm saying for getting
too good,
for getting too good, man. So it's just a very interesting dichotomy of just how that shit works in terms.
I feel also it's kind of like maybe like I never had like a younger brother or something like that, but it's kind of like that. Maybe that you have a younger brother and they're always like looking up to you and doing, and you teach him all this stuff, and then they start getting bigger than you, and they're like, yeah, I don't need you. It's like, what are you talking about? I'm your older brother. You too, you know. So I feel like maybe it's that thing. He's like, it'd be like, what a bean, you know. But I think, but yeah, I never had that.
You're just happy to be there initially. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, I would love to. And it doesn't have to be, it's not anybody in particular I'm speaking of, but it's a situation where just like, you just, and I've seen this with just so many different people in terms of, like, people get mad at you when you start kind of believing in yourself in terms of, like, who the fuck you are. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's not cool.
No,
you know what I'm saying? So.
And I think, feel like, you know, if I want to get to the opportunity to be doing, you know, what Tony did or what Jim did, you know, but to get people to, so they can get better, so then they can do their own thing. You know what I mean? I think that's the cool. Yeah. Like, I don't want somebody to be like, move on. You know, like, you did enough.
That makes you a good person. You want to pay it forward.
Yeah, yeah.
What you're saying, which like, is good. Yeah, that's a good part
that
of
was
your
Tony's,
soul.
That was Tony's one rule. He said, what I do for you, do it to somebody else. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. When Orlando did for me by handing me his apartment, I haven't handed it on to anybody. I've kept it. I've taken his kindness. And I've just, so scratch that example. Never mind.
You haven't done shit.
But yeah, paying it forward. Paying it forward. Always. Support.
You got to fly, man. You got to get out of that studio.
I shut my door on other comics coming to town.
And tell them the rent's higher so you get a little bit extra when you leave.
Oh. Yeah.
I want to now ask this question. It has nothing to do with your life, but it's a little pop question because I want to talk about the whole Kim and Pete Davidson thing. But I want to talk about, in terms of traveling, remember?
Can I ask you this? Is that a long-distance relationship?
That's what I want to know. First of all, I'm like, is it? And also, like,
where is he?
He's in New York, right?
Okay, for and SNL.
Yeah, SNL, okay. And she's here, right?
But do rich people feel that pain?
My question is like, is he going like? First of all, is he taking like private jets all the time, or is he doing like commercial flights and just waiting there to get in group one just to go see Kim? Like, what do you think?
I assume it's a private jet situation at this point.
I mean, let's be honest, man. Kim Kardashian is I don't know her personally in terms of like her character and stuff like that, but on the outside she's just a very just fine ass woman, right?
I love that you said that to then say like
tell me more.
I felt like she was here and I mean you were like going like, hey Kim, man, I just want to say you're a great person, but by the way, you're a fine ass woman.
So, Pete doesn't need a private jet. He's just fucking flying.
So, I mean, I know she keeps people out of prison and all that cool stuff. But here's how fine
that's
she
a
is.
Bonus.
Here's how fine she is. She got four kids and he don't give a fuck. Like, if she was not amazing as a person, like, can you imagine meeting a woman with four kids and be like, yo, like, I'll entertain her? She'd be like, man, you'd be like, fuck no. This ain't the Brady Bunch, okay?
You got four kids.
It's not even a Brady Bunch. It's just five people. It's just Kim, like six people. Kim, Pete, and the kids. Like that's not even enough squares.
If you put Kanye in there, then that's you get him. He's a center square. You don't know what you're getting with him.
That's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, but I mean, I would like. What's the process of the traveling? Do they just go like, hey, you want to just meet up?
I don't know. You raise a good point with the kids too, but I don't know how hands on. Maybe I just have a bad impression of rich people. How hands on?
Like,
but even Kim, how hands on is like. Like he
you
doesn't
feel like he has
he
people to take care of the kids, or she does.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Yeah,
infringe,
I don't think she's.
It doesn't infringe on their relationship, does it? It's not like he's like,
she's not
hey,
a real mom.
Hey, Kim, you want to come with me to the Oscars tonight? And like, I gotta get a babysitter. I better sort this shit out.
Yeah, how hard do you think it is for Pete to hold it? He's holding one of the kids that looks just like Kanye, and he's looking at.
I think that's one of his rules. I don't know him personally, but I think one of his rules is just leave the kids out of it. I don't.
How
long
do you think this is going to last, though? Because,
yeah, no, I don't think that's going to last.
I don't see it going. I mean, I don't know, but Kim might just be. She is a fine ass woman. I said this, so maybe she got Pete under.
Well, maybe
a spell.
This is the right kind of long distance relationship in that they're so rich that the travel isn't a problem. The travel can happen at the drop of a hat, but they are long distance, so if he doesn't want to see her for 5 days, he can get a good solid break. Well, I'm really busy at Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I think
we're
missing the big point in all this, though. Like, it's not
that
about
she's a fine ass.
No, we know that. But it's not about the fact about their long distance relationship. His Kanye's anger
towards this man has started him cursing back in his rap music, which is what I am very happy about, because he was on this gospel rap tip for a few albums.
He was too happy.
It was just too wholesome. That's not the Kanye that I know. And now his latest song, he said, "I survived the crash just to beat Pete Davidson's ass."
And you know that album cover was in reference to that photo that he posted too.
What was that?
You see that album cover, that monkey that was skinned?
But
I swear, I
know what you're talking about, but that, I'm saying, why did he do that?
Why? Yeah, what is the message? That he looks like a skinned ape?
Pete Davidson?
Yeah, that's my guess.
He does look
like.
I could see that.
Yeah, see, it's layers to this shit, bro.
Yeah, there is. I guess so.
I'm a Kanye apologist. Like, that's the first thing that's on my Instagram.
All right. you always apologize. You always support
Kanye. I just see a lot of Kanye. I see a lot of me and Kanye, because I've always said, hey, man, I'm dope. You should listen to me in terms of like what I'm doing. People be like, hey, man, shut the fuck up. And for Kanye, he was always letting people know that I'm going to be like amazing. And they'll be like, shut the fuck up, because you are not, you're a nobody.
Yeah.
You're a nobody until you're somebody, right? So I just, this is outside of the whole MAGA stuff and slavery is a choice shit and all that stuff. Like, outside of all of that stuff, Kanye was just, I just respect his grind and his hustle, you know?
Yeah.
Also coming from Chicago during that time, too. Like, me too, I'm from Chicago, and it's like...
You are?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's suburbs. Yeah, I'll clarify. Northwest suburbs.
Which one?
The very white suburb, Algonquin.
Oh, yeah.
I was like...
that's super white.
Yeah. That's super white.
Schaumburg and all
that. By the Improv.
Yeah, exactly.
I got you.
Yeah, it was just something. Just Kanye was just a part of you for like. I mean, that's when he popped off. Was like, early 2000s and mid 2000s.
We had nobody before Kanye.
Exactly.
We had like Twista and like Do or Die and
Common. If you
and
like
Common,
if you
like wholesome rap,
thoughtful rap, really conscious
positivity.
Shit.
You know.
Yeah.
Have you ever got a chance? Have you? Man, I'm fucking destroying everything. have you had a chance to ever meet him? Like Kanye?
I did meet Kanye one time.
Oh, wow. Oh.
2004 in a food court at...
in the food court?
At Lenox Mall at a Burger King.
Really?
My cousin used to date him. But this has nothing to do with like how we met. I just met him at a fucking food court with GLC and another rapper. And he was doing a homecoming concert for college.
Whoa.
For Clark Atlanta University.
Yeah, okay.
But I told him that, you know, my cousin was his ex and all that stuff. And so he actually talked to me for a quick second. He was real cool about it. And, but that's the only time. But I love this man so much that I was just kind of like, yo, I know I'm going to do comedy. He going to do rap. And we going to have like a concert together. And like, I just had this weird, like, stand type shit. But, that's a very long answer to your question. I'm sorry.
That's a pretty cool answer, though.
Yeah.
Just the fact that it started with a yes blows my
mind. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I like, nah.
Most likely, yeah. I was like, nah. I was
I got stories,
to know
man. More.
I'm sure we all do about interesting shit, but you just happen to ask a question that was a
I don't have stories about meeting Kanye, so I don't know.
who is the celebrity you met that one time that you didn't think you were going to meet, but it was like a big fucking deal to you? Like, just one person that was like, yo, that was fucking cool.
I had it very recently.
What? Oh, yeah, you had Eddie Vedder?
I did. Eddie Vedder, yeah. Who I grew up on his music. What, and
Pearl Jam?
He's the singer.
Chicago
Pearl
dude
Jam,
as well.
Was
he cool?
Pretty important to me in my life. And his music came to me at a time in my life where my father was at the Gulf War. My father was, you know, in the Gulf, and I was, so I just grew up. A lot of my stage presence I took from a musician as well.
Cool,
so
was it a cool experience?
It was intense. It was crazy. Yeah, it was awesome.
Like, he was cool.
He was really cool.
Great.
It was really cool.
There's nothing worse than meeting your hero and their fucking dick.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than that shit.
Oh, yeah. There's a buddy of mine, Ed Byrne, Irish comedian. He always says, never meet your heroes, because he's met, I don't know his name, but he has a hero who's an actor who's in Star Trek. And he met him, and when he met him, he was a terrible man. And immediately, I think Ed fanboyed out, and immediately this celebrity just goes, it was a terrible time in my life, kind of.
That's fucking sucks. Like, as long as you're not invading their privacy, and I know that people don't want to be talked to, but at the same time, you owe your life. You owe your living
To those people who are
your fans, man. Yeah. And if they want to say, hey, I appreciate you, as long as they're not in your personal space, give that fan 30 seconds.
And that's what I was going to say, that like when it comes to you after shows and people come up to you, because, I mean, that has happened to me, you know, a few occasions where people go like, oh, wow, you, that really meant something. Or, you know, they give you something that you're like, sometimes I'm like, really? Like, do you know? Like, why are you? But then I realize, you know, I think it's like you understand. It's like, and then you got to give that respect to those, because you don't ever know what, like you said, what, or for you, when that you listen to that thing or you saw that show and you were really down at that moment in your life and that really made an impact in you. So it's like, and for you, it was just another show on a Saturday night, whatever.
Yeah.
And, but it's like, so I think it's, and like you said, you owe those people. Those are the ones that are coming to, you know, buying your, you know, things and your tickets and everything.
And that's the emotional attachment that people have to these things, too. You sometimes have to take that into account, because I, like, my little nephew, like, loves Imagine Dragons. And I was like, doesn't work for me. But I'm like, but I have to understand, oh, this is important because this came to you at a moment in your life. And you're going to grow up now always loving this band that I know very little about, but
I think comics especially should be grateful that we have any fans, because we work 15 minutes a day. We are not normally attractive people, right? We don't have any athletic ability whatsoever.
We have our own scale. We have for a comic.
Right.
He's really good looking
for a comic. Right. So the fact that you may be a millionaire or a thousandaire and doing well for yourself, and you are at the bottom of the gene pool, like, you should just shut the fuck up and talk to your family.
And also treat the people, too, that you work with, too, as well. Good, too. Or, like, when you go to the clubs and the people that work at the clubs and stuff like that. Because it's kind of like, I think, I feel like everybody, you know, first of all, everybody deserves respect anyway. But it's also, it's like, like you said, it's like, we're just lucky to be doing this. And we're not, I think, comedy is the hardest thing, but it's also the thing that doesn't, it's very hard. Like, people can really, you know, a song can mean something to them, or a movie or a show, really.
Yeah.
But nobody's going to be like, oh, I remember that joke that you made about dicks, you know? And, like, when my dad was dying, I was like, oh, he was such a dick. Yeah, I was like, nah. I mean,
when that's the case, they've got different, deep-rooted.
But it's not as, like, a song. I don't know. I mean, I feel like.
I've had comics. People say something that I said made them laugh about a subject that was kind of like a sore topic to them, and then they enjoyed that. But ultimately, it doesn't happen very often. Yeah. That might have been the only time in my life that this happened, but it can happen, you know?
Yeah.
We have an art. It might not be a song, but, you know.
No, it is. I think it's an art, and it's the hardest art, and I think it's the hardest one, and the one that's not as respected as much.
Yeah.
In the, like, I mean, not respected
by our parents, by our parents,
by everybody. I mean, literally by anybody. I mean, it's like the fact that people go like, like, they think they can just, you can do stand up anywhere. You know, that's one thing. Or,
and don't forget, you're touring the colleges and stuff. There's going to be young groups of friends who are going to see Francisco Ramos or something at the college, and they're going to want to remember that's the time when they're 19, they're amongst their 19-year-old friends or whatever, and they're going to hold on to that moment.
Yeah.
And you're going to see them when they're 26, and they won't have seen those 19-year-olds, and that's the same thing. They'll bring up something. They'll gush.
Yeah.
And you'll be like, why the fuck are you gushing over me? Yeah. Because it's
But comedy has gone through a crazy boom where there's so many comics. Now, I kind of equated to the 2005 poker Texas Hold'em boom.
Oh, yeah. I was just watching. I was watching Texas. Yeah, and the ESPN.
Everybody was playing poker for like.
I play poker.
I did too.
We have tournaments.
I was in penthouses with naked people serving me drinks. People did cocaine in front of me.
It was in James Bond. There's like a 20-minute poker game in James Bond for fun.
That's true. But wait, what do we mean you were doing in you were in a penthouse with naked people?
Like, they try to keep you there as long as...
But wait, well, how did you even get there? Like, what? I was like, I'm like, this is where, like, the difference between me and Dave. I'm like, I play poker, and he's saying, like, I was penthouse with naked people, like, and I'm like, I was just in my friend's body, like, house, that's it.
It started off at, like, a restaurant where they would just have, like, tournaments in terms of, like, you could win, like, a gift certificate to the bar, $50 if you won. But then there's somebody who's like, yo, do you really want to play?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you start playing like little cash tournaments after that's over under the table. And then that leads to
hey, I got a penthouse game. You want to put $50 buy-in, blah, blah, blah. And then you get there, and the house takes a rake. So yeah, as long as you plan, you know, they're making hella money off of you all. Okay. So they want to keep you there. So they're going to give you all the booze. Mm-hmm. They're going to give you all the food. And the people who are serving you are going to be like the most attractive people you've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Right? So it'll be a lot of crazy shit going on that I see here in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. But that shit almost ruined my fucking life. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. In terms of, that's one of the reasons, probably why I'm divorced. And one of the reasons why I moved back to Chicago. I just had to get the fuck, this is the real part of the podcast.
Now we're getting to the end.
I had to get divorced. I was just really into poker. Keep the beer flowing.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
Boom.
All right, excellent, good deal.
But yeah, that's but it is like you said. I think that's a very good comparison of like with the comedy right now, like the boom of comedy, where it's like everybody just
they can do it.
They think you're talking about like random people to like actors who never did comedy and now like want to do comedy because they know there's money in it, you know. And then like, and it's funny because now I feel like we're like or like. The people have done it for a while. We're like those old poker guys going like, dude, you remember back in 84? I won the world. Nobody was here, man. And I won $100,000. Now fucking everybody's.
But they get this crazy fan base really quickly. Yeah. Like, but they don't even have 5 minutes.
Yeah. Did you? So I hosted Crack 'Em Up Thursdays last Thursday. The person who closed out the show, like the headliner, secret headliner, was the rapper T.I.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Who has been doing comedy for about 4 weeks. But guess what?
They loved it.
It's crazy how energy works in terms of how people, like, Usher was like.
Wait, sitting. Usher was there?
Usher was there, man. Oh, Usher was sitting right there watching T.I. do comedy.
Whoa.
And guess what? It wasn't like it was like the greatest set.
Yeah.
It didn't have to be.
Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, just he's already like a proven commodity. So it's like he's doing something outside of his thing. So people are not going to hold him so accountable.
He said, I'm not a comedian.
Oh, that's
perfect. I'm a superstar. And I was just like, fuck. You kind of right. Yeah, like I'm not.
How are you gonna? Yeah, yeah.
People can talk shit to Judd Apatow all he wants. Guess what? He don't give a fuck.
He don't give a fuck. Yeah. It's like I wrote all this great, movies and shows. It's like I can.
It's
do whatever
us broke ass comedians who are the purists. I mean, like, no, that's not stand up. That's not what real stand up is about. Shut the fuck up.
That's a one man show. That's a one person show. Yeah, it's still selling out fucking theaters, man.
I had to follow John Mayer. I had to follow John Mayer here. And he was here, and he was doing it. His whole set was about how difficult it was dating women.
but
I had to follow the fucker.
But was it crushing, though? Was the crowd laughing?
Yeah. I crushed it. I just go on after him and talk about how if he has problems with women, just wait until you hear about this shit. I'm not even famous. So.
But I think that you think it's also because now, like, the way that not even comedy, but, like, just the entertainment industry has evolved where, like, now – before it was like if you're a star, you had to basically like be a star. You couldn't do even commercials. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Now it's
the
like,
old Bill Hicks. This is the old Bill Hicks thing of like if you do commercials and advertising
you were, like,
and stuff,
fake,
you're selling
whatever.
Out.
Now it's
your
like
shit,
it doesn't
yeah.
matter. Now like yeah. anybody, DiCaprio's doing commercials. You know, George Clooney.
Sure.
You know? So it's like now
you can
like
see the creative value in it now, right?
Yeah. Of, like, but yeah. now you. But my point is like now it's like it's also more acceptable. Like. You know, somebody like T.I. to do Stan or John Mayer and be like, people like, oh, yeah, cool. Like before, I think it would have been like more like, what are you doing? You know, so I think that's evolved too. So like now it's like it's easier for, you know, like if you're a singer, can act and then you can do comedy and then can dance and can then whatever, you know, magic.
You know what changed the game? People who blew up off social media. Yeah. So like those people who became Instagram, they had sketches or the TikTok people, the guys who are fighting like, what was his name? Jake Paul.
Now he's fucking fighting, you know.
But didn't it all come from like social
media? Yeah,
right?
For YouTube.
So,
Yeah.
It's kind of like, and it doesn't matter where you get your platform from. Once you get a platform, you can do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah.
Once you
true.
Have it.
Yeah.
And there's people who don't have a platform who complain about it.
Yeah.
Guess what?
Yeah.
We want a fucking
platform. We want a fucking platform, yeah. If not, I'd be calling out fucking Canelo, too. Yeah. Like, I'm going to beat you. Hey, Canelo, te voy a dar, te voy a hacer knockout, Canelo.
This is why I will be on the podcast every week moving forward, because
I'm joking, but
we'll have it.
What do you think of Jake Paul fighting Mike Tyson?
Yeah, no, that's no. He already Mike Tyson was saying no.
Oh, did he say no?
Yeah.
Oh, like, I didn't know that happened. That
but then he's calling out Canelo.
What kind of a fight is Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson? That's ridiculous.
But the thing is,
but
like
he's been holding his own.
Like David's saying, he's that platform, and people now he has that platform. So it's like now it's like people are just gonna because now his whole thing is like he's not stupid. He knows it's like people want me to see me lose.
Yeah.
That's all there.
Yeah.
So it's like I'm just gonna get my money. I don't care. I'm like. Yeah. So it's like, and then after he loses, and he's gonna do fucking something else.
Yeah,
you know he's not gonna stick to boxing.
It's, so as long as you got 15 minutes of fame, milk them 15 minutes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You may or may not get 15 more. You know.
Yeah.
So
no.
Like while people give a fuck about you, and this is what all comics are doing anyway. We all this is why people are creating content.
When yeah.
You see funny ass comics. Making them dumbass videos on Instagram where it's like the split screen and it's like an image of something and then they're doing their best Noah, what's the guy from the Daily Show?
Trevor Noah.
They're doing their best Trevor Noah impression where they're trying to like dissect some shit but they're like you're stupid don't
that's not you
you don't have 12
just
writers
your
behind
thing.
You
just dance on stage
Do your dance and get the fuck off screen. Yeah.
Do it.
That's hilarious. Well, we're almost done out of here. I mean, we're almost gonna run out of time, but this is it was awesome.
We're
man.
Coming
really
down to the end. I mean, do you, we got lots of questions that we had for you, buddy, but we haven't asked them. We do have the.
We have to
I'll
bring
ask
you
the
back.
Final question, of course. But is there anything else from our library of like?
No.
I mean, he doesn't strike me as a superstitious man. I mean, we can always ask him, like, when you're gigging on the road and stuff, and do you have any superstitions that you take with
you?
Do you have, lucky shirts or anything like that? Or like, this better not happen?
No, I mean.
I saw a no coming.
Like, here's what I do. Like, before I go on stage, I say a little, like, most of the time I say, like, a little prayer. I say, what up to my dad? Like, yo, let's do it. Because my dad never saw me do stand-up, you know what I'm saying? So.
Right.
So I just have like a little 10-second conversation with God and my pops, and then I go up there and do it. And that's it.
I started doing that too, but then my dad would answer back like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, come back home. I'm like, what? "You're dead. Stop getting."
Stop telling me to get a real job. You're fucking dead. All right. Leave me alone at least.
That's cool.
That's about it.
Yeah, cool. Well,
all right.
This was great. Thank you for coming.
Thanks so much.
People, if they want to follow you on social media, because I know you mentioned you're special, but hopefully they want to follow
you on social
media.
It's just my name. Everything on social media is just Dave Helm. Dave, H-E-L-E-M. And
any upcoming dates besides here? You're performing here at the Comedy Store every week, but like anywhere, like on the road,
nothing sexy coming up in terms of shit. You know, I'm just here trying to focus on making a name for myself in LA right now and doing that. So
nice,
that's it.
Right on, Dave. We have one final question that we ask of all our guests who come on.
Okay.
And do you have one piece of advice that you love to give to people with regards to traveling? One piece of travel advice, you know?
In terms of. Just one thing.
It could be
it could be a couple if you have it. But some people are like learn a few words of the language or
pack light
that's right. Dan Bacchino was like, you can always buy it there.
Assume people don't give a fuck about you. Like I went to Cabo for the first time. I thought people were just so nice to me, but they just wanted my money, right? And
like a strip.
I am a person who, I am a person who generally just I like to smile. I give people the benefit of the doubt. And this dude tried to sell me a bottle of tequila that was like $200, and like 2 minutes later, after I told him no a couple of times, that bottle came down to $20. Right?
Yeah.
So I was like, yo, you were trying to fuck me. You were trying to take my money.
And he's like, si, senor. Si.
See, I'm going to let you do that because if I do that, that's a little racist, right? So, but just assume that these people don't care about you, man. And they just want your money and just proceed like that because if not, you will get got.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah, no. I think that's for life, too. I think that's a great advice for life, too. Just assume that.
Always also, remember that nobody gives a shit, but
it's true. I mean, I think if you look at it, not that people don't want to help you or like be nice to you. It's like I think it's more about the ego in our minds that, let's say, like, if somebody doesn't say hi to you, or they didn't say, you know, you're always going to take it personally. Oh, that person doesn't like me. Or they didn't text you right back. It's like, oh, I guess they're mad at me. Nah. They're busy with their life because nobody cares. Everybody cares about just their stuff. So it's like, I think it's a great way
to care about you more than anybody else, and you need to recognize that. Yeah. Nobody's conspiring against you.
Of course. Unless they really tell you. Unless they tell you, like, I'm conspiring, I don't like you. Okay, all right, cool, I got it. But if not, most of the time, 90% of the time, all arguments are because we make it up in our minds, man.
Yeah,
but the fact that you're nice and traveling around to people, like, the fact that you're nice to everyone is, like, the key to it. It's like, even if they're, even if their motives are not that
great. So, wait, did you buy that tequila bottle for $20?
No, I didn't. I was really annoyed that this dude was just trying to
hustle me
like that. Yeah. But, like, I learned that when you're in, like, Times Square, don't make eye contact with anybody. Just go because everybody just wants your money. And it's the same way in L.A. In terms of, like, Hollywood. Like, people, you know, people don't talk to you until they find out what you do. And it's like,
you can
help me. You can help me level up. Shit. Yeah.
Hey, what's up?
How are you? Big bro.
Yeah, big bro.
Yeah. Like, fuck you.
Yeah. Where were you before I was talking to, I was opening for T.I. Because now I'm a star. He's a superstar, but I'm a star.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Really, thanks for coming, man. This was awesome. Hopefully, we can get you back here and congrats everything on your success, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks,
this,
man.
This is fun.
This was a fun time. Great chat. Give us the clicks and the likes, man. Check out Dave's special on Amazon.
Yes, and remember to subscribe, follow us, rate us. If you have any questions or any stories about traveling, please send it our way.
Yeah.
All right. Bye. Hello.